Hello, this is Mark, and you're listening to The Husband Did It. I'm out with my co-host, Lindsay. How are you, Lindsay?
I am doing great. I am looking forward to talk about this bizarre case, by the way.
Yeah, this is... It's weird. On the surface, this is a really simple case, but it really gets a little bit complicated, so I'm hoping to kind of have that smoothed out as we discuss it. For some reason, I find it to be... There's a lot of moving parts, and a lot of stuff I don't buy into, and I think a lot of people are holding back information or flat out lying.
I agree, and I just have to say this so I get it out of my system. Yep. What's in the box? Okay, now I'm done.
What's in the box? poor. We'll get into who or what is in the box. I think it's also kind of a time capsule for that person.
Yes.
The whole thing is
very
so
much
creepy.
So.
And also, I have the measurements of the box, and that's kind of crazy. I couldn't edit the document that you created, so I have a separate one, but we'll fix that in the future.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I had the measurements, too. Are mine wrong? Well, we'll get there.
I didn't see them. All right. What box? We didn't even get there. We're talking about John David Smith. He's known as kind of a serial killer at this point, but the case itself is well known as the lady in the box. Let's see. Where does this start? This starts...
Well, when they met, I guess.
That's in high school.
Yeah, they met in high school. They were quickly married in Detroit in June of 1970 when they were both 19.
Did you know that Detroit is actually pronounced Detroit?
No, really?
It's a French word.
It should be. Yeah, that makes sense. But no one in Detroit is going to be able to do that.
Last time I was in Detroit, I walked up to a guy and I said, hey, did you know that the way you pronounce Detroit is, and he shot me. So,
Mark, I was doubting that this was a true story anyway, and the shooting just sort of gave it away.
Yeah. I'm not the Detroit kind of guy.
Nor are you the confrontational type of guy.
I wasn't fighting with him, the imaginary guy.
That's the imaginary guy. Shortly after their marriage, they returned to Ohio, where Janice was employed as a go-go dancer and a police informant, providing information on drug-related offenses.
As one does.
As one does.
So when you were a go-go dancer...
in my good old days, yeah.
I mean, all right, so people have to make a living. I'm not going to judge anybody for doing any type of, work, right? But at the same time, we're kind of painting a picture of maybe a lifestyle, right?
Yes.
Like she's, all right. So in the early 70s, is a go-go dancer a stripper?
I think it's probably topless, but not bottomless.
All right. I categorize it as a stripper. I mean, personally.
I'm not partial, nor do I feel judgmental about using the word stripper, but.
If the word is, kind of like icky, we can definitely use another word. I mean, no. Certainly I wouldn't say that they're a sex worker. I mean, that's so separate, I think.
I agree.
Although it's the same community, maybe. I don't necessarily think that if somebody takes their shirt off and shows their tatas, they are a sex worker. I just don't.
No, I don't either. I think I categorize that differently
as
well.
Go-go's. But go-go, there were go-go boots. So I don't know. I have this like vision of like Angie Dickinson in the 70s with just high boots on. I don't know.
Oh yeah. The boots are part of my imagery as well. So we're on the same page as this.
I don't know the culture or if you knew, I don't know. Were there lounges where you just had girls dancing? It was like Austin Powers.
Right? That's what I'm envisioning too. I'm not sure. I have more of an sort of imagery of what a police informant would be like and how she might have ended up in that position.
And I guess it may go hand in hand because if she worked in a club, people may be doing, drugs and all types of different type of nefarious activities, and she would, of course, be around it, right? That's what
she
we see in the movies.
She would be around it. Yes, that's what we see. Okay, so my information is going to come from movies now as well, but I also don't think people volunteer to be police informants. I feel like they usually get in that position when they themselves find themselves That's actually what I just said. That's
so it's kind of like a rope ladder out of trouble in a way.
Yes. Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
But yeah, and I agree with you. Like, when, and also from TV shows and movies like Starsky and Hutch and stuff like that. Yeah, an informant, like, unless the incentive is money, which I can't imagine there being that much money coming from a Detroit police officer.
No, probably not.
It's not going to stick, right? Detroit.
No.
No, but I can't imagine them saying, like, you know, all right, well, here's $50. You know, tell us what you, you know. I just can't imagine her putting herself in a situation unless, like you said, she's already involved on some level.
Right. And I don't think her husband would be supportive of her being a police informant unless it was something that really she had no choice about.
We don't have a lot of information between the period of time when they were married and the time where it led to divorce.
No, we don't, unfortunately. I mean, unfortunately, but that could mean, I mean, listen, maybe that means it was non-remarkable, which is a good thing, but I think it was more private.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
I think it was just kind of a chaotic 4 years or 3 years because, I don't know, you don't become, I'm not a police informant. I would imagine that you would just be surrounded by a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of stuff going on. And then in the middle of it, you're getting a divorce. There's like something up with all of that.
I agree. I mean, I do have this incident that happened 4 days before her divorce became finalized, where she was physically attacked, sexually assaulted, and threatened.
Now that's weird. Like, well, the timing is extremely weird.
So weird. And unless this is part of what you know, spurred or sparked her murder.
Do you, I mean, so there's a few scenarios that could play out here because, yeah, like 4 days before her divorce was to be finalized, which I think means you go to court and the judge just basically rules you're now divorced. I think.
Yes.
But 4 days before she's, like you said, physically attacked, she's sexually assaulted. There's more than one people. People are saying things that lead us to believe that they know that she's kind of an informant.
100%.
Now, do you think it's possible that her husband, who is not well in the head, I mean, another thing is sometimes you can judge a book by its cover. And I think that John Smith is one of those people. You look at him and you just know. This is not a normal person.
Yeah. I agree. So do I think off? It's I didn't know that was where that was going. No, I don't think if he built his own box, I don't think he hired, you know, he hired someone to do it. You can buy a box at a store.
But what about, I don't know where you'd find a box like this. Well, you know what? On Amazon, you can order almost anything and it'll come in the most ridiculous box. You can use that box.
Oh, that's so true.
Nowadays, though.
Nowadays, probably not then, though. No, I'm not. I'm really not sure. You know, I also in the court records that I found that discussed the her being physically attacked and sexually assaulted 4 days before her divorce. There was also something about her date, quote, Leonard, this guy named Leonard, that she was with when she was first attacked. And I'm not sure if that was just 70s language.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the fact that she was with a man or if she was already dating other men.
No, this takes place in a couple of different places. Did this take place in Detroit? Or
no.
I mean, because they met in high school. And then he moved to Ohio. So this is all happening in Ohio.
Well, they met in high school in Ohio, I believe, and then moved back there. They moved to Detroit and then moved back to Ohio.
So is the attack going on in Ohio or Detroit?
The attack, that's a great question. The attack took place somewhere in Doylestown.
Sounds like a place that would be in Ohio.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
Sounds like a baseball road. I don't know. I don't know anything about this stuff. But
oh, Doylestown, Ohio. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. You can't have. Yeah. It can't be elsewhere. It's in Ohio town.
It's in Ohio. Right. And he had a temper. I mean, John had a temper.
It's weird, too, because he seemed to really. he's able to keep it away from everyone, which I think is so strange. Like, a lot of people, I think, came forward and they were surprised that all of this would have happened. And
who was surprised?
Well, I think the people who initially engaged with them were surprised at his blow up and his anger.
Interesting.
You know, but
well, people that knew him were not, I feel like.
Well, we don't he doesn't have a lot of friends, from what I can tell. He has his family.
He has his family and she has her family. Neither one seemed to have a lot of friends. I mean, obviously at the trial, both, you know, Janice's mom and brother talked about times when they saw John with a temper. But I mean,
well, later on, there's a moment where he's attacking somebody or about to attack them. And the daughter, you know, that person's daughter comes out and it just gets de-escalated immediately.
Okay.
And that person was basically saying how if they weren't there, they feel that he would have killed his wife at the time. And this is the one I'm talking about right this instant is the third wife who ended up being, I don't know if she's still alive, but she was able to divorce and
he wasn't able to harm her. Well, I think she was able to divorce because he was in jail.
Prison. Yeah, but he wasn't able to harm her.
Okay.
It's kind of what I'm saying.
Interesting.
So, all right, let's get into the meat and potatoes of all of this. I mean,
the box.
So is Janice the one where they claim that she died of cancer?
No.
So that's the second wife, because that's where things are getting a little bit like.
No, I don't think that's the second wife either, because she. Well, we'll get to the second wife, but he said that he claimed that she left home.
So I saw this like little documentary type thing on YouTube. And the reason why I'm going to even bring it to the table as fact is because they had the people who were involved in the case talking about it.
Okay.
And let me get this woman's name. It's the daughter of the third wife. And forgetting her name. These names drive me nuts for some reason. And they all look alike. He had definitely a type. This is Janice, then there's Betty. All right. Betty, and then there was Fran. Yeah. There was Fran.
No. Betty and Fran are the same person.
Oh, okay. So who's the third wife?
The third wife is a woman named Diane Susan Bertalan.
All right, Diane. So Diane's daughter met John. And when they were over at the house, she was commenting that there was this a photograph, like a big blown up photograph of his first wife over the fireplace. Him and Diane were just dating, but she thought it was kind of strange. But then she learned, you know, the story, and the story is that she had passed away and she had cancer. So he's like, she just goes, I thought it was kind of weird. It's like a memorial, but you know, he loved her and she died of cancer. So she's like, I really kind of just dismissed it as somebody whose heart was broken. But how weird is it? We'll learn later about the lady in the box. To do that to somebody and then take their paint to take a photograph of them and hang it up. So you see it as a constant reminder.
That is really weird. And it's especially weird because his second wife, her family didn't know that he was married once before.
Yeah. And I guess I feel like even in the period of time this is happening, which is late 80s, early 90s, there would be some reference to another marriage. I have a lot of questions, and maybe you found the answers, but there are a number of things that kind of, they don't make any sense. Like, for instance, the first wife vanished, right? Quote unquote vanished. Well, you can't just see someone vanished and be married to them and then get married to someone else.
No, you can't. Oh, that's an excellent point. I didn't think
right?
of that.
So there has to be, at some point, the court has to intervene and issue a death certificate.
Right.
I think.
But but it was, this was not present day.
But this is the, this is 1990s or 1980s.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the first wife.
That is, I don't, my timeline is, so when did he, she go vanishing? In 70, no, in,
No, 74.
Yeah, you're right. So, and actually, no, I'm sorry, they did get divorced. Janice.
Yes, they did. Remember, it was, the assault happened 4 days before the,
All right, so. Maybe I'm confusing it with that. So with the second wife vanishes.
The second wife vanishes. She's just had a, she's just had a hip replacement surgery and she vanishes.
Yeah. All right. So I have my little timeline here. It's going to help me out a lot more. I'm sorry. I probably am throwing a lot of confusing stuff your way. So yeah, in 19, on November 10th, 1974, just to go back just a little bit, Janice is beaten, sexually assaulted, and threatened at a party at the Portage Pub in Doylestown, Ohio. She reports that it was a blonde man with a gun, and he was quoted as saying, "Narcs always have an easy way out."
Yes.
Which I don't know exactly what that means, but the word narcs makes me feel he knew that she was an informant. But she was beaten, and this whole thing happened. But you know what? She still got the divorce was still finalized 4 days later.
Well, I think the, so to me, what jumps out about this is she was beaten and sexually assaulted, because that could be a reason for her death. Like for her murder.
What do you mean? Do you mean?
I mean, it's possible that John David Smith felt like his property had been tarnished, his property being the woman, his wife, and that that was the final straw in what, you know, maybe he lashed out. I mean, one of my questions, and this is one of my questions, is, so spoiler alert, you know, her body ends up being found in a box. But my question, my big question is whether the box was made before, was it made after, you know, but this to me, at first I thought, oh, this is a great defense. This, you know, attack and assault was probably a great defense for John David Smith, because he could say that perhaps these people came back to finish the job. Mm-hmm. But then when I thought about it some more, I also thought, or she was, you know, damaged goods, and this was the all that stopped all that the only thing that had been preventing him perhaps from murdering her, you know, was perhaps her virtue as his wife, and maybe that was taken away.
I didn't even think of that. Like, that's really sick, you know.
Yeah.
To like somehow blame her for being sexually assaulted. Right.
It happens a lot.
No, I, you know what? It's like when you just explained it, I'm like, wow, there are people out there who are thinking this way. And that's completely backwards and wrong. But she's she divorces finally, right? It's finalized November 14th. But then 3 days later, she tells the family that she's, quote, going away for a while. She tells them, right?
Yes.
And she's never seen again.
No.
John reports her missing days later, which is weird because they're divorced.
Like, yeah.
And this is another little bit of a red flag, or it's just something that's kind of getting to me. Whenever he reports somebody missing, he seems to say what color bag they left with.
Yes. He adds more. But this is a common thing with liars. They add more details than needed.
Is that it? Like, she's claiming that she left with a red suitcase for Florida and entered witness protection.
Right.
And he tells a bunch of different stories saying, like, drug dealers killed her. She went into a commune. I mean, it's kind of wacky. But yeah, I mean, it's reported that his brother, Michael, who later grew somewhat of a backbone, found John building the box in late 74 or early 1975. And the measurements are, it's weird, right?
It's weird. Yeah.
8 inches high.
Yep.
16 inches. The width, I guess. And then 4 feet long.
Yeah.
So it's, like, what is that size?
Oh,
that,
my God. I was obsessing over this. Like
you know what? Like a piano, like an 88 key replacement piano keyboard would be about that size.
Okay, so a small keyboard. Yep. So I looked this up. So because I was sitting at before we started recording today, I was sitting at my computer going, how big is that exactly? And I had two note cards in front of me because everyone knows that note cards are 3x5, you know? And so I was sort of using them to look at it. And then I just decided to ask ChatGPT because I'm a slave to technology.
Yeah.
Like, I what else? Rock,
but yeah.
Okay, fair. And I asked, what is that size? And one of the responses they came back with was actually a rifle case.
Oh, I was thinking a fishing pole.
Fishing pole.
But a rifle case is really in line with this guy.
Right. So I guess it's possible that he was using it for something else because this must have been a teeny woman to fit, you know,
8 inches high.
8 inches high. No boobs, I'll tell you that much. Yeah. So I don't think it mattered if she was topless. So,
but from what I understand, he also dismembered her.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right. Dismembered corpse. Yep.
But still, you know, I still think if you're a person, which we are, you'll fit better if you're in one piece than if you're, you know, taken apart. Is that disgusting?
Really? I thought you'd fit better if you were taken apart.
I don't know. I just feel like it's a messy. Like, what do you do with the torso then? I don't know. It all takes up the same amount of space, I would think. Maybe the head? You're saving the head.
Well, no, she was cut off at the knees.
Yeah. I guess if you do that, you can just put them above, like, to the side of the head.
Well, that's the question. Where were the... I couldn't find information on where those, you know, where
it's a real Jenga discussion, is the truth. And, you know, we laugh, but it's only because we feel so horrible and we couldn't imagine this... This poor woman, right? I mean, I say this all the time, and it's a terrible thing to even say. I just hope that she was dead already when he was doing this.
Yes. I have to assume she was. I have to.
Would hope so. And like, just nothing happens. Like, the guy, he puts the stuff in the box. He's seen packing her clothes around the edges of it.
Right. His brother Michael watches this.
And he's like, hey, why don't we make an ice box? Did you, or something? He makes this comment. Hey, what are you making? You know, and he's like basically stating how it's like just cheap plywood and everything. He's like, well, if you want to make some, why don't we do this? And then John's like, get out of here. You know?
Yeah.
Get out of my life. So he does this, seals it up with the clothes. And he puts it in his garage and forgets about it, which I certainly have done this without a corpse in my garage, where you just kind of put it in a box, put it in the garage, and you forget about it.
I don't even want to know what's in my garage. Right. It's not for women to know. That's what I think.
So. Well, in this case, certainly.
Certainly, right.
But then we're going to fast forward a little bit, right? So June of 1979, right? It's... probably a nice year. You know, Star Wars came out by this time.
Oh, yeah.
That's it's a new true. World, you know?
Yeah.
The grandfather is just snooping around, cleaning the garage.
He was cleaning out the garage. That sounds... let's go with snooping around. Well, that's true. He goes, you know, he's in the garage, and he calls Michael to take care of the box, and Michael comes out and finds that Grandpa has partially opened the box.
Yeah. He's like, I'm hearing a lot about people having garage sales and a success. What's in this box?
That could be it, actually.
Yeah, Michael pries it open and finds, at first he refers to it, and I hate this, a musky odor. He's like, a little bit funky. It was kind of musky. And I'm like, just a little bit? Like, I would just imagine.
It should have been smelling up the whole house, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, it's not like you can seal. I mean, I guess you can. If your cuts are all right, the thing could be airtight.
No, but you know what? It's June. And so that's probably what happened. It would smell, you know, they could smell it. And that's probably what made Grandpa decide to open the box.
If it was sealed tight, I mean, I would imagine on a hot day, it would like hiss.
Yeah.
Oh, so nasty. All right, let's not. So Michael pries it open, finds a mutilated body. For whatever reason, he's like, he knows right away it's Janice, which maybe they just knew. Like, Like, all right, well, there she is. We wondering what happened to her, and that's it. But she's mutilated. She's decomposed. I don't know if you can really identify somebody by just looking at them.
I don't think so either. The strangest part about this to me was the description is that they found a dismembered corpse with rainbow hair.
I cannot understand. They're saying from the clothing dye.
From the clothing dye that had seeped into her hair.
What
yeah.
does that mean? It doesn't.
I'm not quite sure, but, you know, it made me think of red M&Ms and the poisonous factor when we were younger. Mm.
Yeah.
Carcinogens, sorry. And then, but I guess the clothing dye makes sense in some weird way.
Is her
but
hair Mike, blonde? Yeah, it is, right?
It's blonde, yeah. And then Michael says he wants to call the police. Yeah. And Grandpa punches him in the face.
What the hell? Are you kidding me?
I know, he punches him in the face at the suggestion of betraying a family member.
I'd call the police and get the grandfather arrested, too. Right. For assault. It's a very strange thing. And I'm not buying it. I think that Michael and the grandfather said, what the hell? And they agreed not to call the police. Michael's trying to be a hero at the end of this.
Oh, I disagree, because I think this tells you something about the home environment.
Really?
That David grew up in, where, you know, they disagree, they get punched in the face. And There are cycles of abuse in families. And so to me, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, in this situation, right, you, of course, would call the police, right?
Yeah, I would.
But call wouldn't there be something in your mind like ratting out on a family member?
Well, I was just going to say, let me ask you a question. I would call the police if it was a spouse. Would I call the police if it was a child of mine?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're not blood related to our spouses.
I mean, I love my spouse, but I'm thinking of the protective instincts I have for my children.
But what about a sibling? Not a sibling. I'm sorry. One of your
good, because I was pausing to think if I would rat out my brother, and he doesn't listen to this, so I probably would.
Yeah, I think I would be conflicted.
Yes.
Then I would call David Friedman. No.
Yeah. Hi, David.
Hey, David. How you doing? So, I would call the police if I knew that the person was a lunatic, and I feel like they knew that he was a lunatic.
But they raised him that way.
Well, Michael didn't. Michael was raised with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I just don't know. This is like such a mafioso type thing.
It's so strange. And then Grandpa ends up calling John, who comes, gets the box, and drives away with it.
This makes no sense. All right. So he comes in a black Corvette. We're going to guess a late 70s Corvette, because that's all there was.
I'm so glad that I have you to discuss me through the car thing, because it's your jam and it's not mine.
You are not. All right. Let's hypothetically say that it's a T-top. I think they made T-top Corvettes. It would have to be a convertible. There's no back seat in a Corvette. There's a trunk that's big enough for your purse. And I say purse because the only men who drive Corvettes have purses. No. I'm just kidding. No, Corvettes are tiny cars. Have you ever driven in a Corvette?
I think so, but I think it was in high school.
And if you're in the front seats, you're fine. Very low to the ground, you feel like you're sitting on the ground. But if you're in the front, you're fine. But there's no back seat. There's a little bit.
Yeah.
So this is a 4 foot long box. This is like seeing like something on Craigslist and being like, all right, I'm going to go buy it. And then being like, I can't get this in my car.
Right.
He cannot fit a 4 foot long box in a Corvette unless he has like a convertible and he's just leaning it in the passenger side where it would be tipped.
Right.
I don't know.
Does the same apply if we think of it as a rifle case?
But I'm picturing it with with human remains in it.
Right.
So it would have to be, I do have a hard time believing that it's only 8 inches high.
I struggle with it. I'll give it 10 because two note cards is 10. Like I'm trying to think about it. Oh, it could be 8 inches measured from the inside, and then the wood adds another 2, maybe.
I mean, there's a lot of terrible visions. Like you put the body in, yeah. And you put the box on, and then when you screw it down, it just kind of, you know.
Right. Thank you for that.
Sorry, it's early. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. What I believe is maybe they threw it into the grandfather's, you know,
pickup truck.
Yeah, and they drove it wherever. I feel like there's more to that story.
I think there's more than that story too. I also, speaking of stories, can we talk about how John's explanation about the body in the box?
Yeah.
So according to Michael, and this is in court records that I found this, John told him that two men drugged him and took him to a warehouse. When he awoke, Janice was dead on the floor, and an FBI agent and a Wayne County sheriff threatened to frame him for murder. At that point, John was rendered unconscious again and returned to his trailer. In his trailer, he found Janice dead on the floor. Michael testified that his brother then told him that he threw Janice in his van and quickly left, but noticed a Wayne County sheriff pulling up to his trailer. So everyone was framing him, apparently.
So it's another thing that he lived in a trailer.
Right.
I just get the impression that he had a little bit of money.
What gave you that impression? Yeah.
I don't know. He has access to all of these like expensive cars. He seems to be able to drop everything in a heartbeat and go pick up his box of parts.
That could be just jobless.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. I don't know. I don't know why I had that impression. I seem to think that most murderers have a lot of money.
You do. I think they have. Don't. I but think
also yeah. When you're, what would he have to offer all of these women then? Not to say that women are only after him for money, but I don't know if it's for the looks.
I do not think this man is a good looking man. No offense, John. Yeah. But I'm not quite sure. Maybe he. They could be damaged women.
Yeah.
I know that's shitty of me to say. I'm sorry.
Well, he might seek them out. And,
that's what I'm thinking.
And that is kind of the impression I get with the third wife. Who ended up getting married again, by the way. And
congratulations to her.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically the box was just dumped. Which I really don't understand. Like, they just dumped it on the side of the road, right?
Right.
And let the police find it.
Yeah, and that seems like the obvious conclusion, that the police would find it by leaving it at the side of the road. I mean, I don't want to give anyone any ideas, but why not burn the remains and the box?
I think because you're letting grandpa take care of it. And he's like, you just throw it on the side of the road. Nobody will know. Just shut up. I'll punch you in the face again.
Yeah, that could be it.
But you dump it on the side of the road. So now we have a body that's been found.
Yes.
Before DNA testing, before all this. But we also have this woman who left. And that's another thing. Does she not have any family? Like, does she not have any friends? She told somebody she was leaving town, but then she just vanished.
Yeah. She left, and right, Janice left. We're talking about Janice, correct?
Yes.
We're still okay, good. Yeah. Yes, Janice left, and she seems to have family, right? I mean... Actually, I don't know if she had a lot of family.
See, that's what's weird about this entire thing. It's also, how did she allegedly leave? Did she have a car? What happened to that car? It's a lot of weird stuff that's just kind of... It's possible they kind of withheld a lot of information.
You know what? Janice had at least a mother and a brother. Because at trial, they testified that about John's temper.
Hmm. So... I don't know. Maybe they were just, they didn't talk.
Maybe, right. Maybe they just weren't that close, or they were estranged, or maybe they just figured, listen, my daughter got married right out of high school, and maybe she's on her own, and she, you know, when she'll make her mistakes, and then she'll come back to us when she's ready.
Yeah. Tell her she can come back home when she takes off those go-go boots.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, some people are just weird like that. So yeah, the body's left there. They're like, I don't know who this is. It's definitely not the woman who vanished, you know?
Right.
And they actually bury her in like kind of an unmarked plot. I mean, not unmarked, but a Jane Doe type of plot.
Okay.
Which is interesting, because I think nowadays you would cremate.
I don't know if you would cremate. No, I don't think so. Wasn't it... in somewhere in New York, isn't there a
place where they bring them?
Yes,
but I feel like it's full.
Probably by now.
You know, when was the last time you heard of a cemetery being built? And do you build
never?
Never, right?
Never.
Yeah, we have like 3 million people dying every year.
Yeah, where are they going?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I know cremation, of course, has become far more popular, but I still don't think that it's the majority of what people do with the remains.
No, I think a lot of people are against it for religious reasons.
Yeah, a lot of people are. But anyway, just wanted to kind of point out that one little weird Matrix type of thing. It's like, you don't see them building no more. 7-Elevens and cemeteries.
Right. You just wanted to give me something to obsess over tonight as I'm trying to go to sleep. Gotcha. That's going to work. It's going to work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have cemeteries here. Then it's like you still see people getting buried there. And it's like, all right, eventually this has to fill up. Some of these dates go back to like 1810. Like,
well, we already have our cemetery plots.
Interesting.
Yes, like when I married my husband, I knew I know where I'm. If I pay attention, I know where I'm going to be buried. I choose not to pay attention, though, because.
Yeah, it's a little bit much.
It's a lot.
Well, hopefully you'll never have to use it. I don't know. What does that mean?
No.
Forever.
No, I don't want that either.
Thank you, Elon Musk. All right. So getting back to this, for all intents and purposes, they found a dead body and they did not report it to nobody. It became a family secret. Who knows what other secrets that these idiots have?
Right. Michael didn't tell anyone until May of
1999. Also, I don't know if Michael believed the story that John told him about the body, but anyway,
come on.
But yeah, so the body is found along a rural road in Indiana. So, I mean, they did take it for a bit of a drive. So I guess, you know, that is somewhat smart, but is buried as a Jane Doe. And they keep the authorities keep the box and the evidence. You have to imagine, like, what is the storage situation in this country? What are we saving? I mean, I'm glad they did in this situation.
Yes.
But holy moly, is a large collection of garbage in this country.
It reminds me of like Men in Black, like a Men in Black type facility.
There's a show called Warehouse 13 where they kind of have like all those special artifacts, and it's exactly like what you're talking about.
Okay.
Which is an interesting show. So we, 10 years later, this is after the box has been found, which the box was found in spring of 1980. In January of 1991, John files for official divorce from Fran. Sorry, Betty.
Well, John, he marries her in March of 1990.
Oh,
this is the second wife.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
This is the second wife. Smith married his second wife, Betty Fran Gladden Smith, who we're going to call Fran.
Yeah.
Okay. In March of 1990, when the two met through work in Niceville, Florida, I looked it up. It's right by Alabama. I was super curious.
I like the name. I mean, imagine living in Niceville.
It can't be that nice, though.
No. It's all swamps.
It's in Florida, right? And I'm from Florida, so no disrespect to Florida. But they met through work. This made my ears sort of perk up. What sort of work were they both doing?
Well, she was a paralegal.
And John was a criminal? I mean,
maybe he was the... What is it called where you have to have somebody watch you sign papers? I forget what it's called.
Notary Republic?
Yeah, maybe he was the notary.
Right.
In Niceville. He was the in one Niceville. Notary.
Right. So somehow they, I don't either, but somehow they met through work. They got married. And in January of 1991, John filed for divorce.
Right. But they reconcile. And then they're like, you know what? Florida's great, but you know what's even a better place? New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
So they head north.
Yeah.
They head north, as one does. They're doing the reverse Uno card type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, usually you leave New York, New Jersey, and go to Florida. He's going from Florida to New Jersey.
Right.
West Windsor, no idea where that is.
No. I don't either.
And let's see. They reconcile in August of 1991. I thought this was interesting. I got to see an X-ray of this, and I don't know if it was the actual X-ray, but if it was, like, that looked painful. Her hip cracked, like, right in the pelvic, like in the middle, like that one bone that kind of meets around your butt, I guess.
Was
just destroyed.
But she did it getting out of a hot tub in the Poconos.
The Poconos in 1991. I mean, this is the final breath of the Poconos, in my opinion. I mean, the Poconos has like a thing now where it's, you know, you can pick a property pretty cheap. But the Poconos in the early 90s?
I agree. Prime time.
Did you ever do the Poconos? I mean, you're a Florida girl, so you might not have.
No, I never did it.
Yeah, my family would go there in the summers, like the whole, like, the ending of the Borscht Belt of the late 70s and early 80s. You know, God. It was weird. It was a weird time.
I can't get over what Fran looks like, because this is the first time we're doing a case where I'm like, oh, this woman is my age.
Mm. At that time.
At that time, yeah.
But, like, she's also divorced, you know? So she's kind of looking to hook up with somebody, right?
Well, at this point, she's married to him.
Yeah.
Oh, so you think that the Poconos was, like, the hot place for meet and greets?
Maybe. I still think 1991 is late for the Poconos.
Yeah.
Like, you're going for a really cheap vacation, I think, in a heart-shaped tub or something.
Well, there's a place even now that people go to. Where do we go here for that water park? There's some Great water
Adventure
park.
Or I know, Hershey's?
No, it's like Great Wolf Lodge and all those other places people go to.
That is like the Poconos area. That's but what that's I'm thinking. But that's like brand new. That's not brand new, but that's like 20 years ago type of.
Yeah.
In 1991, I mean, that whole area was like really bull, you know?
Yeah.
The Bush years, you know, New York was really doing very poorly at this period of time, everywhere. And I guess like that could also be Pennsylvania. I can never pinpoint exactly where the Poconos are. Cause some people call it Pennsylvania. Some people call it New York. I don't know.
I cheated on my map test in grade school.
Yeah, so. You're Florida. That's Florida. All that matters in your mind.
Exactly.
So Fran, she, like you said, she hurts herself getting out of a hot tub and she can't move. She has to be in the bed to heal because it's excruciating. She just can't move. And she's really at John's, he has to be in her beck and call because no one, I mean, unless she's going to hire a nurse. And this is maybe where I started thinking that they had a little bit of money. Maybe I watched a reenactment and the house was nice or something.
Okay.
and it like fed my brain in that sense. But I get the impression that they had some amount of money. But here's the thing. It doesn't last that long because she gets hurt in August. By the end of September, she quote unquote vanishes from the New Jersey apartment. And apparently John claims that she left a note saying, "Feed the fish. I'll be back in a few days." But the way it was described were two things that I thought were strange. One, she used a yellow suitcase.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
And two, I didn't even think she could move.
It's very difficult. I mean, you know this. I mean, I had major surgery. I broke my ankle and tore my ligaments, had surgery, and I was screwed for like 4 months, 3-4 months. I mean, and this is certainly a more serious injury that she got.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I would imagine just standing would be painful for her, like her whole body. So
yeah,
it's very strange for her to just vanish. I don't know how he would get rid of her either. But in all fairness, I don't believe he was ever brought up on any type of, was he brought up on any charges with Betty?
Yes, but they fell through. Yeah. Yes. So finally in October 4th, 1991, John files a missing person report
at her daughter's insistence.
Right. At her daughter's insistence.
So it's been a week. So September 20th, she's like, "I'm out." Right. But some people say it was October 1st. And then days go by and daughter's like, why doesn't she do the missing person's report? I think it would carry more weight if it was a daughter for some reason.
Maybe you had to be in the state.
Oh, that's a good point. But friends, family is, see, this is what should have happened with the first wife. The family's like, "Where the hell is she?"
Right.
So the friends' family begins doing a private investigation. And that's when they learn that John was married
to another woman who disappeared, Janice. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't know, like immediately you start thinking, like, is this the beginning of a trend? Which I imagine it should be looked at that way.
Two isn't always
a trend, but when it comes to missing people, I think it's a trend.
I agree. You should not have two wives that disappear.
In the early 1990s, at some point, I don't really have a pinpointed time, John begins living with a longtime girlfriend, which I don't know how long time, in a Connecticut beach house that she owns. So she also knows nothing of the previous wives.
Right, but come on, if you're dating a man, I mean, how old is he by this time? You have to assume he's had previous significant relationships. Why is no one, either no one's asking questions or, I don't know.
You know, when you see a picture of him, you just go, what? Like, what is the deal here? He's got, and I'm not like kind of shaming him for not being like, you know,
good looking,
a great looking guy. Yeah. But at the same time, I don't really understand the allure, but whatever. Apparently, maybe he was very charming behind closed
doors. I don't know. I don't like blondes and he's a blonde man.
He definitely has a type. Petite blonde, weak women.
No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. Hopefully they at least fought a little bit. But in a recorded call that was set up by investigators, I don't know what investigators
The girlfriend alluded to investigators to listen. I think the her daughters filed or hired a private investigator.
So this is still the investigators for his second wife.
This is the second wife. Yep.
I guess this is where it started getting really kind of weird for me. Like, it seems like there's all of these different investigators and people involved, but none of them interconnect. Like, Michael and the grandfather have nothing to do with the second wife.
Right. But again, are we talking about crossing state lines?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking at least three states that this is all happening in.
Right.
Which I think actually probably comes into play like doing this and crossing state lines is a big deal. You would think it was just, you know, killing somebody is the big deal, but no. Killing and traveling, yeah. Apparently.
Killing and traveling. And that's why eventually the FBI gets involved. Yeah.
But in a recorded call, she confronts him, which is the longtime girlfriend. And he had, so he takes a polygraph about the second wife, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And basically claims we're not, he's just basically saying he failed it.
Right.
And he basically threw a hypothetical out about someone dying in an argument. I don't know. And she's like, are you guilty? I think she like flat out asked him and he kind of shied away from the question. But he said that I failed the thing and I lied.
Right.
But wouldn't go into details. Not with our, the information that exists. But as one does, John marries his third wife. Which I don't know if that's the longtime girlfriend.
I don't believe it is. No.
All right. So this is Diane, single mom. You know, just kind of like looking for fun. She is in this interview I watched and she said how, I mean, she was like ripping into him a little bit. It's like, he wasn't very attractive. And then they show him in this like goofy ass picture. But she's like, he was very nice and we got along and he proposed to her and she goes, I don't love you. Do you still want to marry me? It's like, maybe I could one day learn to love you.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's like, okay. You know, so because men are pathetic. And it's also kind of pathetic on her part to just, you know, to marry somebody just for the sake of getting married, really.
Yeah, true.
This guy loves getting married. Like he loves.
Well, he loves murdering his wife.
Right. It's very odd. There's a 1950s movie, which I do recommend everyone go see. It's called Monsieur Vidal. And it's a Charlie Chaplin movie. And it's okay. It's a talkie. It's not a silent. And he plays this French con man who basically seduces women and then murders them. And it's a very dark comedy, obviously. And I cannot believe this movie was made. It is incredible. It is brutal. And there are moments that are such nail biters. Like, so Monsieur Vidal is just, I recommend everybody should watch at least one black and white movie a year. Watch this one. Huh. But it's a very dark comedy, but it's very good.
I've never even heard of it. It sounds fascinating.
I'll send you a link to it. I do.
Yes, please.
Highly recommend it. But it's kind of the thing, you know, Vidal was a con man who would seduce these women, be very charming, and then murder them. And it just seems like he's doing that, but he's also not choosing women who, because we've heard this before, right? You've heard like the whole con man murders the wife, but usually there's a financial variable.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be a tremendous, as far as we know, financial variable. So one of the things with Diane is Diane said, I forget what she did for work, but John would visit her at work and show up every single time with a new car. Because apparently he was involved in classic cars and expensive cars. And at this point, he did have money. Okay. I don't know where he got it because he gifted her or brought her a Ferrari.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was just strange. The whole thing is super strange. In the reenactment, she starts like wondering, like he's being like really weird. Like they're at this like car show type of thing. And the whole thing is super, super sketchy. And he decides he has to go home. Like he needs to leave. So she decides to follow him. And in the reenactment, he's in this kind of like economy convertible car and he's going crazy. He's punching the steering wheel and he's all mad. And she's like, I never saw anybody act like this. And it's like, she's trailing him in a Ferrari. And it's just in the reenactment, like he doesn't see this red Ferrari, like 10 yards away from his car. It was really stupid, But if she really trailed him, like, you don't trail somebody in a Ferrari.
No. No,
but you anyway, don't.
It's not a subtle car.
No, it's not a subtle. It's like usually they're obnoxious and loud. So, but she said that, you know, these are the things that, you know, made her like him, but he was like super sketchy.
Yeah, that's not surprising, though.
And we don't have too much information in terms of how their relationship went sour. Did you dig up anything?
No, I didn't. I didn't find a lot on the third wife at all.
But there was one instance where she served him with divorce papers. Okay, something's got to happen. Like, it's kind of like, it seems as though the trend is something happens and these women want divorces from him. So he's doing something to freak them out.
I would say he harms them physically.
You think it's just an escalation of?
I do.
That's it. Well, I believe it.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, if you're capable of like killing somebody and putting them in a box and then putting a picture of them in your living room to see every day, that's something really fucking wrong with you.
I agree.
So why, after serving the papers, Diane and her daughter knew immediately that he was going to come and confront them. He drove like classic cars, so he had one of those loud, obnoxious, like, blah, blah,
blah, blah. The muffler thing, yeah.
So they're in their house and they hear her pull up. So she calls the police and says, "I served my husband with divorce papers. He's coming here to kill me."
What year was this? Do you know?
It's about 2000.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's about that period of time.
That works.
Which is weird, yeah, because like we're going from 1970 to 2000. So DNA exists at this point.
Yes, but was it popularly used at that point?
It was being a little bit used. I think it was still like very expensive. I
remember they had to build up the database of it.
Right. But so he breaks into the house and they're hiding in closets and he's in a rage. So he finds her in the closet hiding Diane and is like screaming at her. And Diane's like, "I never saw anyone this mad. Like it wasn't even the same person." And then her daughter comes out and says, "What?" You know, yelling. And as soon as he sees her, it's just a light switch being turned off.
And wow.
It's like, "Hey, let's talk about this. Let's get through this and whatever." So obviously red flag, right?
Right.
That's where the daughter's like, "I feel absolutely sure that if I wasn't there, he would have killed her." So, you know, of course, very grateful that she was there. There seems to be a lot of stuff going on at this period of time. In May of 1999, Michael approaches the FBI. He approaches the FBI about it only after his grandparents passed away, because he's apparently afraid of his rusty old grandfather.
Yeah.
Oh, no, father.
Or grandfather.
Was it the grandfather?
I think it was the grandfather. Does that make sense?
I mean,
I have grandfather written down in all my notes.
Yeah, me too. Now that because it was grandfather punched him. Yeah, so maybe the grandparents raised them, but he only went there after the grandparents had passed away. Which is, so we see the backbone of Michael, but at least he went to the FBI to talk about the box and the body. They exhumed the body. They identify that DNA matches in April of 2000 to Janice Hartman. Which is, you know, April 2000 is very early for this. And there was also this one individual who facilitated all of this, who was on the original case as a regular police officer, but had graduated to the FBI by this point. And he said, "I remembered the case, so it really stood out to me." So
right.
I think that's one of the reasons why it got a little bit more attention, just because he was involved from the very beginning. Thank goodness. They arrested John. many months later, October 3rd, 2000, he's arrested. I don't know whether he was arrested for exactly the DNA evidence or what Michael said. Michael has him on tape. I heard some of the tapes. Michael's basically trying to get John to admit it. And John is like really not letting anything out. He's like, I think he did it. He's like, well, that's a shame. He's like, yeah, but what about this? And what about that? He's like, I don't know. What about that? You know, like answering questions. And so I think he knew he was being recorded, or he was such a weirdo.
I agree. Yeah, it was he's a weird man. And I think he knew he was being recorded.
But in July of 2001, things start kind of moving. He's tried in Wayne County, Ohio, for Janice's murder. The New Jersey evidence about Fran is ruled inadmissible.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to take what you can get.
You have to take what you could get. I agree 100%.
The jury convicts him of murder, but acquits on aggravated murder. And he's sentenced to 15 years to life.
Which is nothing.
Yeah, I just don't feel like it's great. And his parole eligibility in 2001 would have been in 2011. So he would have been out now for 15 years. Diane and her daughter, they testify to the prosecution. John tries to appeal in 2002, 2003. It's unsuccessful. But then, all right, so we move forward. He goes to prison. 2002, yep. New Jersey civil court rules that John is responsible for Fran's death.
Yes.
And I think that adds, let's see, there's more to it because.
Well, it doesn't, because what happens is it adds extra years. However, in 2021, a judge rules that the fact that Smith had been convicted of murdering his first wife can't be used as a motive for murdering his second wife. The case is dropped because there's no body to be found.
Mm-hmm.
Even though John admits to having disposed of it, investigators couldn't produce physical evidence of death, a confirmed method or location, or anything that corroborated forensic findings. And the confession didn't stand on its own.
What is the corpus delicti rule? So I saw that in your notes and it's popped up here.
It's independent evidence that a crime actually occurred.
Right. And that's missing.
Yep. And that's missing.
Even though like there's a reported admission about disposing the body. This rule basically gets it dropped. And that's just 3 years ago, New Jersey prosecutors.
And that's sort of the end of the story, it feels like.
He remains incarcerated in Ohio. His next parole eligibility is 2029. But this is my question. If he got 15 years in 2000 or 2001, shouldn't he be out?
He should be getting out soon, yeah.
But I mean, if he got 15 years, he should have been out in 2016.
Oh, that's true.
So they had to have added something to, they can't just say, well, he seems guilty. Let's keep him in there. Unless he did something in prison and it got extended.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'll have to look into that. I'm sorry I missed that. That's true.
No. It's one of those things. It just doesn't.
I couldn't find any more on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that there's probably more victims. I think that this guy absolutely is the type of person to have attacked other people. But putting somebody in the box and just leaving it right there it's really bold, right?
Yeah, it's really bold and it's really horrible.
I don't know. What do our listeners think? Do you think Fran's case should have gone to trial?
I hope they think yes. I think yes.
Yeah, the whole thing is very odd. If looking back at this whole type of situation, it's a very I mean, the guy is best in prison. I just hope that he dies there. You know, he's 75. He could live.
Yeah. I mean,
he could get out. He was born April 2nd, 1951.
Well, if he gets out, I hope no one marries him.
He seems like the type. He's pretty good at getting married.
I know.
Three marriages. And those goofy eyes. Like, he's like, eh.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well,
Lindsay, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this.
Thank you, Mark.
Weird case. Appreciate it. If people like this podcast, please consider subscribing to The Husband Did It. Head on over to Facebook and look up The Husband Did It. And we look forward to the next one.